14 episode, The Tower of Babel.
Space, heart, abyss,
mused the charming fair-haired Lily aloud, thoughtfully twirling a lock of hair around her index finger. Many eyes were fixed on her at this moment, all waiting for her response. In the spacious hall of the temple, there was a playful excitement this time around. Seated on the wooden floor, the disciples engaged in a rather peculiar conversation. At first glance, their speech might have seemed disjointed, but sparks of understanding flashed every second here and there, and smiles betrayed the genuine pleasure derived from the ongoing dialogue. The sparkle and intrigue in the eyes of those present could not have left any casually entering person indifferent.
"Love!"
exclaimed Lily at last, looking enthusiastically at her opponent.
"No, that's not it. Missed!"
Jan interjected with laughter, covering his face with the wide sleeves of his orange mantle. After a few seconds, he surveyed the audience again and challenged his friend sitting diagonally across, seeking support.
"Constantine!"
"Vacuum!"
came the lightning-fast response.
"We add, but no,"
Jan continued, turning to Sophia, who was waiting to be called upon, already guessing what her answer should be.
"Space, heart, abyss, vacuum,"
the girl listed. She smiled and maintained an intriguing pause to finally confirm the direction of her thoughts. Finally, she decisively and loudly declared,
"Emptiness?"
"Yes, yes,"
cheered Jan, while the others began to applaud. The logical chain of his thoughts had finally become clear to everyone else.
"Sophia sets the next word,"
the young man said with relief. But at that moment, the venerable sage in black attire entered the hall at a leisurely pace. The disciples welcomed the great keeper of knowledge with love and admiration. His arrival managed to fill the hall with the energy of active engagement and resourceful states. A powerful flow of impulses emanated from those gathered, balanced by the subtle aroma of sandalwood incense. From the depths of the temple came a soft, meditative music, creating the perfect atmosphere for the reception of knowledge, generously bestowed by the bearer of truth. The association game was a special task for the disciples before today's discussion. Thanks to this, they could tune into the topic of conversation and better grasp its significance.
"Well, how did it all go?"
the master inquired, settling comfortably in his chair.
"Amazing,"
Natalie shared her impressions. The closest disciple, a lover of such interactive exercises and training.
"Some associations, for example, coincided with others, while some I still don't understand,"
she said with a puzzled smile, looking at everyone present.
"Likewise,"
supported Herman, a tall young man with glasses. For someone, emptiness, as it turned out, is associated with the word heart, and for me, with something cosmic, lonely.
"I've just heard the phrase emptiness in the heart quite often,"
Jan said with a sympathetic sadness in his voice, to which Herman's words were indirectly addressed. He hadn't expressed himself like that for a long time. His big heart was filled with life, love, and meanings instilled in him by the teaching. But this association came to him this time for some reason.
"It was an amazing experience, Keeper,"
the young man continued with enthusiasm.
"We spoke as if in different languages, but when the intended word was guessed, it turned out that we were talking about the same thing."
"Exactly,"
Kate chimed in, suddenly grasping the secret intention of the game.
"That's what we intended to talk about today. Dear Master, tell us why people often speak the same language, their native one, but don't understand each other."
"Exactly the same as in your association game. Under the same word, people can understand different meanings or imbue one word with different images, guided by their own experience."
The Keeper of Knowledge bestowed a kind glance upon the attentive disciple and, after a brief pause, decided to recount a little anecdote.
"Once we had a Georgian driver named Solomon. He described how he once went to a local cafe. There he struck up a conversation with some guys, other drivers who often had lunch at this bistro. They asked him, 'What kind of trailer do you have, Solomon?' Solomon was surprised and said he drove without a trailer, to which his companions laughed and corrected him, saying they meant some sort of derogatory nickname. He said, 'Well, usually they call me Katso.' What does Katso mean? The locals wondered. Solomon replied, It means man in Georgian. The local guys scratched their heads and said, No, in our dialect, Katso means cat. So you'll be called Cat. That's what we'll call you.
And so, each person invests their own meaning in every word spoken, without caring about what it means to others. Then it turns out that people say the same words, but stop understanding each other. And all because everyone has invested some definition and meaning into that word.
Great one. I have an example, but I'm not sure if it fits here.
The beautiful Margot hesitantly continued.
And if I understand it, it will greatly help me in my personal life. Can I tell it and seek advice?
With a slight smile, the master nodded, and it became evident that Margot's question would definitely be resolved with a positive outcome very soon. The girl began to speak slowly, carefully choosing her words, trying not to delve into unnecessary details.
The thing is, my husband and I often argue because of the lack or, conversely, excessive support. If we apply this to today's topic, we can say that we argue because of different understandings of the word support. My husband always implies immediate actions. When I seek support from him, he immediately asks himself, What should I do? How can I help? And immediately starts trying different ways to solve the issue. But at that moment, I want to receive emotional contact. Feel that he's with me in this situation, that I can rely on him. I want hugs and inner protection. In other words, I'm asking for emotional support. In his case, it's completely the opposite. He rarely directly asks for my support. But I always feel, or so I thought, that he needs it at certain times. And I try to emotionally nourish him, empathize, give warmth and care. Recently, we found out that this only hinders him in such moments, and he wants from me exactly real actions and suggestions, some practical advice. Am I understanding correctly, Master, that this is our problem? We once agreed to support each other in everything, but it turns out we didn't discuss the definition of this word and its meaning for both of us.
Yes, this is a suitable example, Margot,
the sage said sympathetically, and looked directly into the eyes of the disciple.
But it's never too late to talk about it, to express your desires clearly and formulate them as precisely as possible. And most importantly,
here the master emphasized, raising his index finger,
make sure that your opponent understands you correctly. Then these problems will disappear. Living together and finding common ground will become easy.
Dear Master, it turns out that many people make such mistakes. They say the same words, don't understand each other, and eventually drift apart. They think, apparently, this person is not for me. They don't understand me. Maybe we should part ways. Because everyone invests their own meaning and significance into each word.
The disciple suddenly realized the unique simplicity of the conclusion and at the same time the complexity of its understanding in ordinary life without the Master's assistance.
You've guessed it very correctly,
the sage said kindly.
That's why first, it's necessary to clarify what each person understands by each word. If at least the basic definitions used in the conversation are clarified, some mutual understanding can arise. And if this is not clarified, then it will be very difficult to understand each other correctly. And living together or simply maintaining communication will be difficult.
The girl warmly thanked the Keeper of Knowledge, placing both hands on her chest, indicating that her heart felt calmer from his words. Meanwhile, the conversation ignited with new examples from the lives of the disciples and others.
Beloved Master, isn't the story of the Tower of Babel described in biblical legends exactly for this purpose? To show us a failed experience and where it led?
Inquired the curious young man, known in narrow circles as an avid pedant. He enjoyed dissecting all questions very thoroughly and applying knowledge obtained from books and practice. He was particularly fascinated by literature from genres of spiritual enlightenment and history.
The meaning of the legend of the Tower of Babel can also be misinterpreted,
said the Keeper of Knowledge, tilting his head slightly forward, looking at the young expert as if over invisible scholarly glasses.
The people who wanted to build the tower to the heavens were mere egoists. And what did they plan? to reach God,
the sage pronounced with a good-natured mockery in his voice.
So God saw their desires and the true meaning of this construction. To punish the fools, he made it so that people spoke different languages. But the legends do not explain to us the true interpretation. It's not about people suddenly speaking Spanish, Turkish, Arabic, and other languages. They stopped understanding each other, speaking the same language. Such punishment is much more severe.
So people just started investing different meanings into the same word, so they couldn't finish the construction?
The young man expressed extreme surprise. He realized he had been mistaken in interpreting this legend and pondered how many other important meanings he might have missed while studying biblical stories.
That's right, Mark,
patiently explained the great sage.
That's why if a person is self-absorbed, if they adhere to strict beliefs on certain issues and do not accept others' opinions, do not hear what other people say, then such a person, as a rule, is used to investing only one meaning into a word, the one they consider correct. Such a character is easy to recognize among people. They often argue, may even come to a fight. They defend their word like a ram, not accepting others. Hence so many misunderstandings in communication and quarrels, scandals. That's why we need to awaken and carefully observe what meaning we invest in words and what meaning our opponent assigns to that word. Only then is mutual understanding possible.
Thank you, Master.
Mark looked puzzled but happy. Communication with the Keeper of Knowledge always brought joy to his heart. Many preconceptions about life, creativity, literature, and art were often debunked in conversations with him, which gave life freshness and the feeling of an interesting quest. The next question was asked by Lena, an Eastern beauty in a long one-color dress.
Beloved Master, misunderstandings arise constantly among people in today's society. I myself often find myself in such situations, and sometimes it helps me just to look at a person and as if tune into their wavelength. Then I somehow manage to understand the same meanings with them. Even if a person speaks completely opposite things to the meanings they imply, I still manage to understand them in those moments. Am I reasoning correctly that we really need to learn empathy in order to tune in and understand people?
Of course, Lena.
The Keeper of Knowledge glanced affectionately at the obedient disciple. The wise reasoning of his disciples always brought genuine pleasure to the Keeper.
This is the right technique for good communication. You need to tune in, see what words a person uses in their speech, what they mean by them. You need to ask clarifying questions, learn the thought process and images that are embedded. One must take a closer look and listen to the person. Only when we see their worldview can we adjust and begin to interact, explaining what we want to convey.
I understand, Great One. It seems even more interesting to get to know new people this way, while practicing these techniques. It turns out that in such a conversation, you begin to be more respectful towards your opponent. After all, not everyone is capable of being empathetic and ready to understand what a person says, especially if your point of view is completely different. It even seems noble. Thank you.
The girl shone and felt a bright flow of love emanating from the Keeper of Knowledge, pouring directly into the soul of the diligent disciple. Suddenly came the sound of contemplation.
Great One, what should be understood by the word nobility?
Ventured Christian. The slender man with a thick beard and a small earring in his earlobe was a rather extraordinary personality. He often asked interesting and sometimes completely unexpected, profound questions.
This word is so often used, but what exactly is meant? Maybe it refers to advantageous aristocratic origin. What noble deed must one perform to be called noble?
A noble person is one who performs a good deed. It means kind, selfless, bringing good to themselves and all people. When such a deed is done, then such a person is called noble.
Succinctly and accessibly explained the Master. The disciple was surprised at how deep the meaning was hidden behind such simple words, and she immediately wanted to thank someone to embody this good in life. The decision came to her as fast as lightning struck, and she, respectfully bowing to the master, said,
"I appreciate you for this knowledge, Great One."
Then, with a smile, added,
"I wanted to ask you, Great One, will you object if I stay after the conversation and help the temple servants light the candles and prepare the practice for other disciples?"
"Of course, my dear. I will be glad to accept your help,"
replied the sage with love, and enjoyed how quickly his disciples absorbed the knowledge received. Christian, taking advantage of the opportunity, asked the last question about the interpretation of words.
"Since we're on the subject, Master, can I ask another question?"
he quickly and cautiously asked, as if apologizing for deviating from the course of the set topic.
"There is such a concept as clarity of speech. It's when a person in their speech expresses exclusively what they want to say. Very clear exposition of thoughts, without ambiguous statements, repetitions, very clear. It turns out that false personalities in this case do not hinder this person from expressing themselves, do not distort meanings. That is, they have defeated them and freed themselves. Their speech becomes easy, effortless, whatever they want, such meaning they convey. But my question is, does this help the opponent understand them better?" "Definitely not."
The master shook his head, guiding Christian in the right direction.
"No matter how clear and skillful our speech may be, we will never know what our interlocutor understood in those words until we inquire. Your words may have a completely opposite meaning for the opponent. It depends on their personal experience, and we cannot predict what it is." "I understand. Thank you, Keeper,"
Christian replied succinctly, and immersed himself in further reflections until he was interrupted by the voice of the gracious Olesya. The girl was rubbing a piece of orange mantle in her hands, exploring the grooves of the seams with her delicate fingers.
"And what to do, Master, if the interlocutor starts to argue and stand on his own, is very categorical, and does not want to hear any other position?"
The sage noted Olesya's question as very practical and relevant. There were plenty of enthusiasts for arguments around, and dealing with such stubborn people in debates was a very challenging task.
"It's the same thing,"
the master repeated, reinforcing his words with a vivid emotional message.
"Disputes often arise because each person understands different meanings under the same words. A person begins to insist that only their definition of the word is correct, and partly they are right. For them, this meaning is correct. It is based on their experience. Therefore, as Lena already noted, you need to tune in to the person."
The sage winked playfully at the girl and she blushed, as it happened every time she pleased the keeper.
"You need to understand what our interlocutor is really talking about, what they want to convey to us. We need to look at what terms they appeal to, what intonations they use. Try to be on the same wavelength with them and use the same terms. But no one does that. That's why there is so little mutual understanding in human conversations. Moreover, there is a substitution of meanings. One says they're love, and for them, it means, for example, hitting on the head. And another understands their love as being carried on hands for the rest of their life. So once a school bully approached the excellent disciple and blurted out to her forehead, 'I love you,' the excellent disciple beamed with happiness, wanting to hug him, but he hit her on the head with a backpack."
The listeners chuckled restrainedly, and the master continued seriously.
"And all because each of them understood something different under the word love. If the excellent disciple knew this bully better and didn't live in illusion, she might have been the first us to hit him with a backpack."
The sage raised his voice at these words, and the audience couldn't hold back their laughter anymore. Satisfied with the positive atmosphere, the Great One folded one hand over the other and summed up briefly.
"Therefore, it is necessary to be attentive and understand the formulations and meanings that each participant in the dialogue puts into words."
The tall, effective blonde Albina suddenly asked,
"Our beloved master, does it mean that for someone, love is expressed through trust, and for another, physical contact can be very important in great amount? For me, for example, gifts are very important. That's how I understand that my man loves and values me. How are love languages formed?"
The keeper of knowledge appreciated the openness of the disciple and the singularity of the question asked. He gifted the bright Albina with a glance full of divine, sacred, flawless love, and then answered gently and accessibly.
"Everything depends on a person's perceptions, my dear. Under the word love, we all understand different things, and different associations arise in us. One will associate ownership with the word love. Another will associate jealousy. A third will think of gifts, and a fourth will think of their own selfishness. Therefore, in this important matter, it is first of all necessary to understand. Partners need to determine and clarify who and what they mean by the word love, so that there are no problems in the future. When people don't agree on this in the beginning, it turns out that he wanted to show ownership, and she expected expensive gifts daily, and they don't want to give it to each other. Then there are quarrels, scandals, and fights, because each one imposes their own concept of love."
"That's right. So many examples come to mind from your words,"
Albina lamented.
"Many of my friends often face the same problem. They envision love in one way, and their partners see it completely differently, hence the misunderstanding. But associating these words with today's association game, the thought comes that the language of imagery is more universal and suits everyone. Is that so, Master?"
She turned to the sage, seeking support for her thoughts.
"For example, when we give exercises to our students, we offer each one individual images that resonate with them."
"Can you imagine how much easier our communication would be if we were able to see the images that the opponent presents?"
The master exclaimed playfully, rubbing his hands together.
"How much understanding it would bring. We need to cultivate and develop this skill within ourselves. Try to imagine in conversation what images the other person sees, what pictures pop up in their head."
Here the keeper gave an example of how a mother tells her child about her love, deliberately envisioning what kind of person he should become in her opinion. She clearly envisioned excellent grades in school, in all subjects, sports, hobbies, and a docile character. She saw the image of an obedient child who, like a trained dog, obediently follows her commands. That's what the mother meant by her love. At this time, the love of the mother in the eyes of the child appears to be permissiveness, unnoticed pranks, and the crunch of the sweetest candies. This is where the first collisions begin, when the child deliberately drops a cup of milk on the floor. He sincerely hopes that his mother will support his delight. But instead, he suddenly encounters her anger and disappointment. This moment is where their misunderstanding begins, because they understand the same word completely differently. Once again, the words of the master deeply penetrated the souls of his listeners, spreading inside with the bitterness of personally experienced trials. Happening once or repeating again and again, such misunderstandings inflicted a heavy trauma on everyone. An unperceived word spoken by a significant person could change many events, lead to wrong decisions, and ruin relationships that were dear. Memories overwhelmed the disciples at this moment. From their faces, it could be read that the sage, as always, hit the nail on the head with the example given, but the momentary sadness quickly turned into joy. The thought that all they had experienced had led them to the master filled their hearts with a high, bright feeling. It could be noticed how the gaze of several disciples, just a moment ago dimmed by overwhelming sadness, suddenly lit up with rays of love. Lifting their heads, looking at their master with trembling reverence, they felt happiness, Nothing was more important at this moment than being here and absorbing the knowledge from the great man, whose words hit the heart every time. After a few moments spent in elevated emotions, practical disciple Antonio was the first to break the silence.
Master, this is indeed a big problem for humanity in our time. It manifests negatively in all spheres. Even at work, if you think about it, communication issues often become the cause of mistakes. For example, a senior master gave an assignment to a specialist, but the specialist misunderstood it, yet didn't ask again, feeling embarrassed. As a result, he did it differently than required. This led to a series of mistakes by other specialists. Usually, such moments are referred to as the human factor, but many leaders do not strive to fight it and reduce the risk of such mistakes.
That's why in civil aviation, all assignments are communicated only through reports. To avoid misunderstandings, since it concerns flight safety,
Maria spoke, having worked in air navigation services for a long time.
In aviation, this is certainly a mandatory measure. But in other enterprises, this is rarely encountered,
Antonio countered.
Such a form is not the most convenient and requires time. Also, sometimes a person forms some image in their head, but doesn't express it clearly in words. And what's even worse, they say to their subordinate, "Well, you understand me, right?" And the subordinate feels ashamed to say that they didn't understand anything, hence the mistakes. But this is also a common example in everyday life. My wife often gets upset with me because of her ideas, which she forgets to inform me about,
Antonio added with a smile.
So how can we solve this problem, Master?
The sage observed the debate with interest, once again admiring the diversity of thought among his listeners and their dissimilarity to each other.
Yes, reports are very important for a person to clearly understand the task,
he finally replied.
But it is important to have feedback. Leaders should teach their subordinates not to be afraid to ask again and ask clarifying questions, provide feedback, inform about the actions planned to solve the task.
Great one, may I add?
Maria volunteered again and, receiving permission, continued.
Also, to avoid misunderstandings in such matters, instructions are important. For us, aviators, there is a detailed instruction for every task, down to which way to look and which button to press and how many times. An extraordinary task rarely arises, for which there is no instruction. But if such a problem repeats, recommendations on how to solve it are immediately written.
A very correct approach.
The sage supported Maria with respect for her responsible profession.
Even if a person knows their job well, they still need to have instructions at hand because there is always fatigue. Or due to multitasking, everything can get confused in the head. You need to have a document nearby to refer to. Therefore, reports, feedback, and instructions are the three pillars of reliable production,
concluded the master.
And in everyday life and in ordinary worldly life, you just need to tune in to the interlocutor, ask again, and clarify what they meant. Make sure they understood you correctly. Then everything will go smoothly.
Suddenly, rain poured outside. Large drops splashed against the glass, scattering into small splashes. In the resulting pause, everyone clearly heard the melody of this lively drum and, without talking, closed their eyes, following the example of the master. The audience plunged into an unplanned trance, tuning in with the great keeper of knowledge. Everyone was focused and relaxed at the same time. The master had previously explained how to immerse oneself in such spontaneous meditative states and how beneficial they are for emotional relief. After a few minutes, the sage whispered and asked everyone to stand up from their seats.
Let's become the rain together,
he said in a half voice.
We need to shake off, but let your eyes remain closed. Imagine that you are the drops. You bounce off the windowsill and make a sound. Give your body freedom. Let it bounce and jump, drumming like rain.
the disciples bounced in the spot. Their bodies emitted positive vibrations and created an incredible flow of positive charge. Each emitted their own sound, resembling a summer downpour, but altogether it sounded like a unified ensemble of drops. The trance lasted for several seconds. Opening their eyes, the disciples were in a state of euphoria. Overwhelmed, they exchanged silent, joyous glances. Such a discharge was very timely and gave them much strength to continue the conversation. When everyone returned to their senses, the master indicated readiness to listen to the next question. Lana, a mature woman of 45 with kind green eyes, requested the floor.
Keeper of knowledge, I also have a question about mutual understanding. I noticed that when we are in a state of predominance of our spiritual strength, it becomes easier to understand people. For instance, when we gather for discussions with other disciples in the temple, misunderstandings rarely arise, despite being all different and not very close acquaintances. Am I correct in understanding that a common language means when all people will constantly be in a spiritually uplifted state? Then, even the most diverse individuals will be able to communicate in the same language?
Exactly,
confirmed the sage, vigorously nodding.
Let's return to the story of the Tower of Babel.
At this moment, the keeper turned to Mark, who eagerly looked at his spiritual master.
Why did the builders speak different languages?
Because they were driven by selfishness, and their goal was to reach the sky to God,
proclaimed diligent Mark with the demeanor of a top student.
Exactly,
nodded the keeper and turned back to Lana.
The higher the tower rose, the more selfish each of these people became,
emotionally explained the sage.
Thus everyone began to distance themselves more from each other. And the more they distanced themselves, the more often misunderstandings arose. So everyone started speaking different languages. Then they could no longer pursue a common goal and finish building the tower. In such a situation, when nobody understands each other, only war can arise. And we see that wars were numerous. In such an atmosphere, faith and spirituality took a back seat. It was impossible even to adhere to a single set of religious doctrines. Disputes and fights would arise here. Therefore, divisions arise, repression and persecution. People do not listen to each other but only defend their righteousness in what each word means. That's how discord arises.
The disciples immersed themselves in contemplating these words. The great master's speech skillfully intertwined historical events, biblical parables, and millennia-old wisdom accumulated by generations of thinkers, philosophers, and shamans. At the same time, the depth of his utterances was in no way inferior to their simplicity and accessibility for perception. At that moment, one of the disciples scanned the room in a circle, examining the images on the walls. It became clear that the girl would come to some important thought any moment now, and after a second, she asked her question.
Our dear keeper, I really love examining all the images displayed in the temple and those you sometimes show us, but given the topic of our conversation, I suddenly thought about them. Am I correct in understanding that you are emphasizing shamanic icons and images of shamanic spirits precisely to redirect a person's focus from these expensive bathtub images to something of light? To surround us with images of spirits, something divine, so that we disconnect from worldly needs? I think so also because sometimes, for example, when women see the image of the spirit Agdi, they switch to this image and engage more in the school.
You are very observant, Lolita,
praised the sage the thoughtful thinking of his inquisitive disciple.
We explain about spirits because people do not see the subtle level, do not understand that there are many beings around them which they do not see but which can greatly affect them. For example, demons, larvae can strongly affect them, sending bad thoughts, bad state, then feeding on their energy. They do not see this, do not understand what is really happening. There are many bright spirits, angels, etc. People can appeal to them, connect with them, ask for their help, receive their support. These images are placed here for this purpose, so that through visual images, the most active channel of perception for a person, to explain how the world is really arranged.
And it's also much easier, Master, in prayers and requests,
noticed observant Lola.
People often do not know which image to visualize in prayer and do not imagine who they are asking for help from at the moment. People do not know how angels or spirits can actually look like, and when there is a vivid image, it's much easier to appeal to higher powers. Isn't it?
Exactly right,
supported the sage.
Human vision is such that we see far from everything that exists around us. Many abilities are blocked for us, so that we are in ignorance and go through a difficult experience here. But if a person understands this and begins to understand where different spirits are and how they influence him, then he already begins to be free from these influences. Even if resentment creeps into him, he already understands that it's a larva that has attached itself again. If there is this understanding, then a person can already dissociate from it, start laughing, stop indulging it, so that it does not feed on his energy. That's why we explain about spirits, explain how to interact with them, what to do, so that a person understands that there is this invisible world, how it strongly affects him, and how to properly establish relations with it.
Jan, a tall young guy, the one who proposed emptiness in today's game of associations, decided to sum up all that was said about mutual understanding. He formulated the main theses they had come to.
Master, so to begin to understand a person, it is very important to lower one's ego and try to be empathetic, to tune in. One must try not to have the last word, prove, accuse, but precisely to understand what the person wanted to express, what they meant. Then mutual understanding will come. At least one of the opponents must take the first step and go beyond their ego. Right?
Everything is indeed so, Jan.
The tranquility and peace resonating brightly in the master's voice were transmitted to everyone.
Of course, one must understand what a person is saying, in what language they are speaking, to understand them. And then there is only one thing left. To adapt to their language to explain something to them. Otherwise, they will never understand anything. There is an expression that truth can only reach a person in the form of a lie.
Confusion flickered on the faces of the disciples. Each tried to ponder this phrase and understand it. The keeper of knowledge hastened to explain what was said.
Why is that so? Because, for example, Buddha comes, sees in which language people are speaking, and he adapts to their language so that they understand him, what he wants to convey to them. And that's when the truth begins to distort. He cannot say it directly. He has to adapt to them, to their definitions, to their judgments. That's why we see that there are so many spiritual teachings, because each master came into some environment, adapted to this environment, adapted to their sacred scriptures, to their beliefs, and through this tried to comprehend the truth and convey it in a form that was recognized. Therefore, one conveyed it this way, another conveyed it that way, a third in some other way. The truth is one, but sages speak of it differently, adapting to their listeners. And that's why the truth is conveyed in the form of a lie. When such adaptation occurs, the truth, of course, is already distorted. Then if someone becomes a close disciple, it is explained to them truly.
Got it!
Suddenly illuminated Jan.
That's why Christ spoke only in parables to everyone and explained the meaning of these parables to the disciples, right?
Exactly.
The sage confirmed the disciples' guess with a warm smile.
Christ spoke in parables so that people could understand some simple images that were accessible to them. They understood some stories that they could perceive in their ignorance. And to the disciples, Jesus explained the meaning of the parables deeply. So that's how the truth is conveyed to people in the form of a lie.
The great keeper of knowledge explained complex things in simple language, and they became so elementary that it seemed impossible not to understand them independently. However, a master was needed for their realization. This was the magic of his energy, which he continuously purified and refined through spiritual practice. Only next to him did everything incredible become elementary. Seizing the moment, Laura, a slim petite blonde, 40 years old, requested the floor. Her hair was neatly arranged in a symmetrical bob just below the jawline. Combined with her narrow, pointed nose, this made her features practically perfect.
Keeper of the truth, I also want to speak on the topic, but from a slightly different aspect. It is also very important to choose words correctly, not just to make a person understand the underlying meaning, but also so that they produce exactly the effect you are aiming for. Well, to put it correctly, with the right emotional coloring, taking into account the individual characteristics of the opponent, right?
Of course, Laura, you are right. But I suspect you are now talking about a specific problem. Tell us, what is troubling you?
The keeper of knowledge possessed incredible insight and always noticed between the lines if the disciples were puzzled by any question.
Yes, Master. Our moods and anxieties are never hidden from you. Thank you.
Laura became emotional and smiled shyly.
I gave my students a practice to describe their request to God with specific formulations. To learn to clearly formulate their desires, I thought they would ask God for help in realizing their purpose, understanding the meaning of life on earth, about sublime emotions, and other spiritual states. But it turned out that Alina from Finland asks God to help her find 40,000 euros for the repair of the bath and 10,000 euros for the repair of the kitchen. And Katie from Austria prays for the opportunity to buy a sofa for 1,500 euros.
The girl's face took on a puzzled expression. It was evident that Laura felt awkward about her students' worldly desires, and she sincerely wanted to explain to them the insignificance of these requests.
I know that such mundane desires weigh them down and hold them back in their development, and I want so much that they move forward and don't stop themselves on such trifles. Tell me, Great One, how can I explain this to people correctly? Because if you tell them directly, you don't need these things, they will be upset. Somehow, you need to awaken in them their own desire to develop first and not to earn money for various worldly silly goals. How can this be done, Master?
While Laura was speaking, the other disciples immersed themselves in memories of their own experiences with similar mundane requests. Someone remembered how vigorously they saved up for a brand new pickup truck. One of the disciples suddenly distinctly heard echoes of her arguments with her husband about how much she needed a dishwasher. She remembered praying to God for her husband to finally come to his senses and spend on an expensive purchase. It was a completely different, worldly, empty life in which there was no master. No God in his true manifestation, no awareness of the subtle level and the infinity of spiritual life. It seemed very distant, as if it happened to someone else. Returning to the room from the depths of her memories, the girl felt happier and more fulfilled than ever. Tears of joy welled up in her eyes. Finding the path and finding the master. That was truly important and brought the highest pleasure and peace to the heart. The keeper of knowledge caught this impulse of sublime emotions and, for a moment, turned to the girl, smiling, and then turned his attention back to Laura, replying to her question.
We need to explain that there are different things, stools, chairs, tables, that different things exist, and we may want to improve them, make them more beautiful, more convenient. For example, one may want to improve the bathtub or improve some room. But what good does it bring to us if we ourselves are in a negative state? We will simply waste our energy in vain. Therefore, we need to improve ourselves. A person buys a big bathtub for themselves, lies in it. Everything around looks beautiful, but inside it's empty and disgusting. Money and energy are spent on the bathtub, but the rest of life somehow doesn't go well, if you think about it. There's not enough strength for anything, little love in life, too much negativity. But hey, you can cry about all this in the new bathtub.
The sage made a sarcastic, humorous conclusion.
But if one invests their energy, money, and attention in their own development, then they will change. They will become different. And then there will be no need to cry in the bathtub anymore, because everything in life will be good for them, and the bathtub will seem, overall, ordinary, not requiring urgent improvement. From the fact that a person has installed fancier plumbing in the house without urgent need, a golden toilet, for example, their life will not change for the better. The person remains the same as they were. They might even become worse if they boast about this golden toilet. That's why one needs to strive for self-improvement, invest in their development, and be in a state of constant progress. That's when life will truly change. Golden toilet are the least of it. No matter how many you install, no matter how much time you spend on them, life won't get any better.
Laura bowed to the sage and promised to convey his words to the disciples. Throughout the hall, there was a roar of delight and excitement at how skillfully, clearly, and interestingly the sage answered the most difficult question for ordinary perception. At that moment, the curious Mark raised his hand again. Throughout the master's conversation with other disciples, he kept nodding from one speaker to another. Observing the course of the conversation attentively, he noted something in his notebook and even made some sketches. His question sounded like this.
Master, you tell us how important it is to invest in our own development because people initially lack such a desire. Outside the school's walls, in the ordinary world, there's no such thing. Nobody explains it. Nobody talks about it. Am I right in understanding that a person tries to find happiness through all this worldly stuff? With this thought, I have a desire to show the whole world that through spiritual development, you will find a state of fulfillment, happiness.
Mark spoke so simply, without using historical quotes or specific terminology. Everyone was surprised by the simplicity of the revelations from the young man.
I want to tell them that they don't need baths, TVs, refrigerators. Even we, the disciples, sometimes seem to need to remind each other regularly that if such worldly material desires arise, then these are signs. It means attention needs to be paid, effort needs to be made, and more spiritual practices need to be done. Then the understanding will come that the true goal lies elsewhere. And these refrigerators and expensive watches, these are all empty, unnecessary. And then this state of fulfillment will come. We will begin to change our state and stop paying attention to these silly, fleeting desires.
Mark exhaled. With this exhalation, he seemed to release some worldly desire that had been weighing heavily on his mind, unwilling to leave. And he became enlightened. With this exhalation, he felt lighter. Noticing this, the keeper of knowledge sent Mark an invisible charge of light and support. The disciple felt protected under the patronage of the great soul. Now he envisioned how easily he could give up material excesses, which suddenly made him feel a growing power and inner fortitude.
The thing is, a person becomes a victim of advertising and propaganda.
The master responded to the fervent speech of the young man.
Of course, an ordinary bathtub is needed. One can't wash outside in the cold winter or anything. An ordinary bathtub is needed. But then a person sees in an advertisement or from neighbors some huge bathtub. They fall for the persuasion that this bathtub is better and cooler than the one they have. Out of foolishness, a person falls into the trap of advertising tricks. They start thinking about a new bathtub, and their own now seems much worse to them. They start seeing flaws in it and coming up with all new, weighty reasons why they must buy this new bathtub. But instead, it's better to think about the true reasons for one's desire. You need to ask yourself questions. What do I really want? Swing, what emotions do I want to experience from buying this bathtub? Zrinya, will this bathtub give me those emotions? Or would it be better for me to look for them in something spiritual? Gradually, a person comes to the thought that they don't need to buy a bathtub to experience a state of joy. For example, one can just start with laughter, meditation, that's all. Then you don't need to invest $40,000, build a bathtub, wait. You just need to start laughing right now, be joyful, and then the desired state will come. Now you don't need to make a bathtub. The person got what they wanted, even without the bathtub. And so with all other feelings, emotions that one wanted to get from some material goods in life, it turns out that the person can evoke them themselves, evoke, cultivate them in spiritual practices, and enjoy these states. It turns out nothing external is needed for this. Only spiritual practice is needed, which will awaken this emotion in a person, and they can enjoy it.
Mark needed further clarification, and he continued to delve into the topic.
Wisest, but what about the fact that, starting a spiritual life, sooner or later, you still immerse yourself again in worldly routine and in your familiar environment? How do you learn not to succumb to the provocations of vile influences and continue to remain spiritual inside during this time? It turns out that a person attends a seminar, receives knowledge, maybe even lives it, and even enlightenment comes to them. But then they fall back into the environment of their friends, their colleagues, and again immerse themselves in everything mundane. What should be done? Should one strive to change their environment or make a strong effort to control oneself and not depart from the desired state in order not to succumb to influence?
We need to constantly remind the disciples that there are many influences exerted on us by an unhealthy society. Upbringing, bad influence from friends, mass media, all of these have an impact on us. But we must choose which influence is favorable for us. We need to ask ourselves, why should I, like a fool, submit to all sorts of influences? I'm not a fool. I have my own position and my own formed attitude towards the world. I will choose influences that will lead me somewhere, that will be beneficial for me. If I am under the influence of the underdeveloped, then it means I will feel bad, just like them. If they influence me, then slowly they will drag me into their swamp. I don't want to end up there, so I must choose bright, sublime influences to come under them, to evoke sublime emotions associated with the higher world and with God. This means I must cut off all negative influences so that they no longer affect me. This is how one should think. And even if thoughts inspired by others' negative influences arise in the head, one must reject them, drive them away, and stop thinking in that direction. Then a person can become free from them. They will no longer drag them into the swamp. They will move towards bright, sublime states that will bring them happiness.
Thank you for this knowledge, Great Master.
Gratefully thanked and hurriedly made another note in his notebook. Taking advantage of a brief pause and feeling inspired, a disciple named Ollie decided to ask his question. He was a medium-sized man, 40 years old, tanned from regular archaeological expeditions, often being alone with nature, working in the fields in different corners of the earth. He gradually came to the path of truth. During one of his working trips, he met a man in an orange robe. Getting to know him better, Ollie was surprised by how similar their thinking and worldview turned out to be. The man greatly intrigued him, telling him about the school and the master. In his words, the disciple then heard the call of something real, truly spiritual. He heard what his heart had long sought, and now, after a long journey, he himself sat opposite the Keeper of Knowledge, clad in orange robes, reverently before his majesty, absorbing his wisdom.
Master Heer, from the thought that people invest money in toilets and bathtubs, an analogy came to my mind. Of course, we can laugh at these people, but we ourselves often invest energy which God gives us in completely wrong things. For example, we invest in false personalities, in masks, and so on. How can we understand what you are talking about? Where should this energy be invested?
Very interesting observation, Ollie.
The keeper encouraged the thoughtful disciple with a flow of kindness emanating from his calm velvet voice.
Atman, of course, is complete. The higher Upanishads say, from the whole emerges, but the whole remains. This means that Atman is a particle of God, but it is asleep, it is identified, so our task is to awaken it so that it can become complete. And now it has identified itself, thinking that it is the body, that it is the mind, that it is emotions, that is, it has lost itself. Therefore, we are trying to restore this completeness. We want to return it so that God can awaken within us. But we must invest our energy, first of all, in the development of the spiritual personality. Only it can lead us to the truth. That is, we accumulate spiritual impressions, some spiritual information. From this, our spiritual I is formed, and then it begins to act. It begins to change everything else. It is our spiritual I that controls all our other personalities, develops our essence. Therefore, we need to invest more in this now. Do more spiritual practices, receive more knowledge, receive more sublime impressions. This will help us in our development.
The master pronounced the last words, raising the intonation, giving a strong focus on development. This created a positive, spiritually charged atmosphere. Everyone felt united by these words. They rallied, developing under the sensitive guidance of the wisest guru. The disciples applauded, and smiles adorned their faces. Under the influence of subtle energy, many remembered their first meeting with the keeper and realized what incredible changes had occurred in their lives and their state since then. Many of the disciples did not hide their tears, being under the influence of overwhelming feelings of happiness and infinite love for this amazing person. With these emotions, Lika, the youngest of the present disciples, turned to the sage. She was no more than 20, and her voice trembled slightly with overflowing emotions.
Master, I have one idea, or rather, reflection. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I feel that God has given me a chance in this life to learn about the school, to meet you, and to truly develop. But I'm pondering why this chance was given. It seems to me that this is the result of some efforts of Atman from life to life. Perhaps some good karma has already been accumulated, and with each new life, a tendency towards spiritual development has formed. And thanks to this tendency, today I have the opportunity to be here and communicate with you.
At these words, the girl stopped restraining herself and cried tears of joy. The keeper admired the fireworks of her elevated emotions. The girl felt how the sage lovingly enveloped her soul in a warm embrace. Instantly transformed, she looked at the keeper with gratitude and finished her thought.
Is it really happening, Great One, that for many lives Atman has been doing many good deeds for such a great purpose?
Not quite,
the master began gently explaining.
Atman hasn't made an effort yet. If Atman were awake and could make efforts, then everyone would reach enlightenment fairly quickly. But Atman is still asleep while the soul is working. That is, the mind and emotions make some efforts, and it's through this that the tendency develops. They are striving for something. The soul cultivates something within itself, and this carries over into the next life. Whatever the soul has cultivated, whatever it has strived for, whatever efforts it has made, all of this carries over into the next life.
So, does this mean the soul embarks on the spiritual path? Does the soul understand that without a master, it's impossible to develop and there are too many negative influences in the world that disrupt, interfere, and don't provide opportunities?
Tenderlika clarified. It was evident how sincerely she believed the master's words and how eagerly she listened to his explanations, trying not to miss a single crumb of his teaching.
Of course,
the master patiently explained.
That's why a master is needed. A conductor is needed. You need to find a master. Come to him. But most importantly, you need to be able to listen and strive to understand so that the soul can continue to develop. When this happens, and the soul develops, it begins to awaken God within itself. God starts to awaken, and then enlightenment arises.
I understand you, beloved master.
Laika clasped her hands together and pressed them to her chest. As if in this gesture, she compressed all the bright emotions that surged within her at that moment. Ollie, who decided to ask the Keeper of Knowledge one last question for today, spoke up again.
Master, regarding the development of the soul, I would like to clarify something. I've heard about these deserters on a subtle level. That is, souls that didn't want to incarnate and fled from this incarnation, not wanting to continue their development. Is it really possible that a soul can stop developing, reincarnate, or even disappear? Or is awakening and union with God inevitable for everyone sooner or later?
Your deep reflections and truly wise questions bring joy to my heart.
The Keeper addressed all the disciples with feeling, and then directed his response to Ollie.
Atman is a particle of God. Sooner or later, it will merge with him. But the soul oscillates. At first, it's at a low level, choosing the path of degradation, identifying with harmful habits, vicious desires instilled by the sick society. It can start to degrade, suffer, agonize. After great suffering, the soul begins to reconsider its life and analyze the reasons for its suffering. Questions about suffering in worldly life and about the cosmos as a whole begin to arise. If such thoughts arise, then it may start reading wise books, conversing with wise people, and come to spiritual development. There will be a desire to develop spiritually. Then the soul starts its path to enlightenment. Then it realizes that God sleeps within it, starts to awaken God, not allowing him to sleep. And then God awakens.
The rain had long stopped, but nobody noticed. Immersed in the words of the Keeper of Knowledge, the disciples were afraid to be distracted, so as not to miss a single savory piece of important knowledge. Every thought of the Master was savored in the minds of the disciples, recorded and reread many times. Everything that this great sage said was eagerly listened to and forever remembered, somewhere in the recesses of their minds. The conversation came to an end. After the meeting, it was decided to continue the game of associations in the free hall. The theme of mutual understanding captivated the disciples. The Keeper of Knowledge left the hall to good-natured exclamations of forced farewell. Soon, his disciples followed him. Only Christina, the red-haired sun-like girl, remained to wait for the temple attendants to help with the practice preparation. Left alone, the disciple surveyed the hall. A feeling of gratitude filled her soul, that same gratitude for which she remained here, to give goodness to the Master, to this beautiful place, and to God, who in the form of the great sage brought so much happiness to her sunny soul.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.